Hello, podcasters, and welcome back to Faherty Land. What can I say about John Daly that hasn't already been said ad nauseam? He's so full of contradictions that it's impossible to predict what's going to happen next. Is he going to win, or will he run up a 12 on the first hole? Maybe and maybe. In fact, the only thing you can say for certain is that his talent for winning is undeniable. Winning two majors against the best players in the world is no fluke, no matter how you look at it. In 2012, I visited Dardanelle, Arkansas for quality one-on-one time with the Lion.
You and I go back a very long way. In fact, I always tell people that you and I will always be friends because we know far too much about each other.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Way too much about each other.
Some of which is not good.
But a lot of it's good.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's true. But everyone at home, you know, they think that they know John Daly. In many ways, you're the opposite of Tiger Woods because, you know, he has this sort of veil of secrecy and an iron kind of a curtain around him. Your life has been public domain for so long. People have seen your triumphs, your tribulations, you know, the struggles, the victories. And you've always been, if nothing else, honest.
Yeah, if you mess up, just say you messed up. Tell the truth, get on with it, and try not to make that mistake again. And, you know, it's just something that there's no skeletons in my closet. There's none at all. So, and I feel good about that. I feel letting it all out and letting people know that if we're athletes, which now I think we are because all the guys work out except me, but and I won't work out.
Well, you work in. You do sit-downs instead of sit-ups.
But we're human. And everybody needs to know that we are human. We're not any different than anybody else in the world. And I think a lot of media gets that tied up into Tiger, for one, you know, and a lot of they put them on the, you know, the media puts you way up here, and one little thing, they can't wait to bring you all the way back down. Yeah. And then you got to fight, climb back up, which I don't mind fighting.
Just to go back to one thing that you said there, you know, you make mistakes and you try not to do them again. You've had a minor problem in that area.
Yeah, a little bit, but not as bad as people want to perceive it as. You're marked for things that you do wrong, but you're never really marked for things that you do right. You know, I've done a hell of a lot more right than I've done wrong.
We can never forget John's support for the Boys and Girls Clubs and the Make-A-Wish Foundation, but perhaps his most significant mark for right was his contribution to the college educations of Emily and Karen Weaver, after their father had been struck by a bolt of lightning and was killed the week John won the PGA Championship in 1991. Their meeting, 14 years later, confirmed the heartwarming value of human kindness for Emily, Karen, and John.
All you got to do is watch the news at night. You know, good news doesn't make news.
Right, it doesn't.
It's, you know, they say good evening to start off with and then tell you how bad it is.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's so right.
You turned pro in 87 and immediately, you know, you played well. You and I met in 1989 in South Africa. I was leading an event at Rand Park in Johannesburg by a shot. You ended up beating me by a shot that day. And we've been friends ever since. That's 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And then in 1991, when Nick Price withdraws from the PGA Championship, you drove all the way from wherever?
Memphis.
Yeah, from Memphis to Crooked Stick, Indiana.
But when John Daly burst onto the scene as an alternate entry at the 91 PGA Championship, he was a breath of smoky air. Riding into Crooked Stick Golf Club in Carmel, Indiana, with a grip-it and rip-it long ball, a dead-eye short game, and a laser stroke with his putter. Over four wondrous days, he went from an outsider to a force of nature fan favorite. And when he won it, love and adulation poured over him like chocolate gravy on biscuits and bacon.
You know, you changed the game in a lot of ways. I mean, you made it... You know, we're talking about a high-end country club atmosphere, you know. And here's this kid from Arkansas, blue collar, doesn't really describe it. No collar, actually. I remember finding out where you'd driven it on some of the holes. And Crooked Stick was a golf course where there are a lot of dog legs, and I had about 18 yards of fairway to hit into. Mm-hmm. And it would go up here to about, you know, 290 yards and then turn this way. And you could drive it over the corner, so your fairway was 50 yards wide.
Well, it's weird now because golf now is the bunkers are 300 to 320 to fly, and the fairways are 20 to 30 yards wide once you get past them. Before them's 50, so that's how the game's changed. But that golf course set up perfect. I used to hit about a 10, 15-yard draw, and it was definitely a course for a drawer. And I had a great caddy, Squeaky.
Squeaky.
Nick Price's caddy, so he was awesome, and it's a great memory.
Dardanelle, Arkansas is about 90 minutes outside of Little Rock. It's a simple place, population of about 3,000. There's a Walmart, some gas stations, and even a university where you can get a degree in hollering. But when you're there, you get the feeling it's a good place to kick back, take life easy, and disappear. Growing up in Dardanelle, Arkansas, this is a small town. What did your mom and dad do?
My mom was more of a housewife. My dad worked in nuclear power plants.
You stayed here with your mom?
Yeah, me and my brother, we stayed here and finished high school.
Oh, you actually finished high school?
I did.
Well done.
Always wanted to be a Razorback and go to the University of Arkansas. So as long as you were here for 6 months prior to the first semester, you would get in-state tuition, which was cheaper than out-of-state tuition.
Did you lose touch with your dad back then?
I lost it probably when I was about 10 or 11. You know, back then you used to get whooped, whether it was with a hose, a stick, or a belt, or whatever. But I understood getting whooped for things I did wrong, but I didn't understand getting whooped just for no reason at all. And it's something me and my brother, we talk about a lot. It's mainly how he felt. If he just wanted to hit something, right. It was either me or my brother. And
was he a drinker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, heavy.
Because that's a marker that's, as you know, is carried on.
My dad was tough, and the relationship's not that great now. But me and my brother, we deal with it best we can.
Mama Lou was enormously influential and important to you.
She was my hero. She was everything to me.
And you lost her early this century, 2002?
Yeah, she was 65. Yeah. And everybody misses my mom.
Yeah.
Around here.
That sadness stayed with you for a long time?
It did. You know, unfortunately, she passed away when I was in Australia. And a lot of people didn't know that. And Greg Norman just ripped me a new one. Just one of those bad rounds at Coulomb, the PGA. I was playing with Norman, and that's where I threw the putter in the water and walked back to my room. And it was pretty much from that. I just really shouldn't have played. It's just a tough time being all the way there, knowing I need to be here trying to help my brother and my sister and everybody on how we're going to handle everything. But losing her was the biggest loss of my life, I mean, no doubt.
It's a tough thing to deal with when you're asked to research your family history and you realize that you're just one of a long line of complete and utter screw-ups. I'm predisposed to be the way that I am. What's your message to little John now that you know?
I've learned a lot from the way my dad taught me or raised me or whatever he did.
Mm-hmm.
To do just basically the opposite of what my dad did, and I think I'd be a pretty good father. My dad, now he helped me with sports, and you know, wherever when we did move, he would try and get close to a golf course. But the loving thing that you see in athletes, I thought Tiger and his dad, that was great to see. Mm-hmm. Almost wish I had that, you know. But I had it with my mom, so one attitude's not bad. But I want little John to know I've never spanked my kids. I think a voice can do that. Or there's times when they don't pick up their toys or whatever that I will put them in a pile and I'll burn them.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I'll just burn them. You don't want to pick them up, I'll burn them.
So he may not end up an alcoholic, but he could be an arsonist or pyromaniac. Coming into the 95 Open Championship at St. Andrews, 29-year-old John Daly had given no perceptible indication that something big was afoot. But Big John found himself in a three-way tie for the lead after the first two rounds before struggling on Saturday.
He roared back to the top of the leaderboard on Sunday, finishing the day tied for first with the great Italian Constantino Rocca. In their four-hole playoff, Daly managed the wind and the pressure to shoot 3-under for a four-stroke win, giving John his then-record second major title before the age of 30.
People think that you can drive it anywhere at St Andrews. You can't.
No, you
depending
can't.
On where the flag stick is, there's about a 25-yard strip that you need to be in. How did you manage to maneuver it around there?
Everything was fly ball on the left side. Just hit it left. When you're hitting an L wedge or sand wedge into all the par fours and almost driving a lot of them, those shots don't seem as hard from 160, 170, or 180 yards.
Yeah.
It's a golf course that you either love or you just absolutely hate.
Mm-hmm.
St. Andrews, though, it's an easy golf course until the wind blows.
Yeah.
And then it becomes impossible.
I thought that you were the best long putter that I'd ever seen. You laid it up close to the hole from 90, 100, 120 feet more often than anyone I'd ever seen. And you had that beautiful touch around the greens. You were much more of a complete player than just someone who could murder it off the tee.
You don't have to be a great ball striker to win golf tournaments on any tour. You've got to be a phenomenal chipper and putter. Jim Furyk, I mean, he's got an incredible short game.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a complete player because he doesn't miss a fairway. But he's not real, real long as well, like Corey Pavin. And Bubba's kind of like the long, long Corey Pavin.
He is.
I mean, yeah. I've seen Bubba hit it. And, you know, he can hit it left to right, right to left.
Yeah, and this is in an age where it's difficult to make the ball.
With the golf ball.
Yeah, make it
shape.
The golf
ball is made to go straight. It's harder than that brick on my chimney right there. That takes a lot of talent to be able to move the ball the way like Bubba does.
There were a lot of times that you just hit the wrong club, which was usually driver, for the sake of the crowd. You considered yourself an entertainer as well as an athlete.
We are, but one thing I also learned from a lot of the guys that I met, things aren't going good. Practice something.
Would that be why you put up more huge numbers than any other player? You'd make a 16 or an 18 or a 19 in a hole. You were going to hit a shot you got it right.
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah?
It's not about the number. At a certain point in a golf tournament, you know, they can talk all they want about the 16 at Bay Hill, but I was going to hit that 3-wood over that corner.
You were determined.
Not it was, going at the green.
It was
I'm
a
just trying to get it to
moment.
A corner. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But I made a 2 on the next hole.
You went 16-2?
Yeah. They asked Tom Watson, how did John make a 16? Hey, he missed a 12-footer for a 15.
Yeah, that's like Seve. You know what I mean? How did you, four-putt the sixth? He said, I miss, I make. Hubert Green, Fuzzy Zeller, Lee Trevino. What was it about men like that inspired you?
It's a combination of a bunch of them. Like, I learned how to play with Nicholas on a cartoon. I learned the interlocking grip from that. This is when I was 4 years old, so.
I would have guessed, Hagar the Horrible or something, you know, might have taught you, because you played like Hagar the Horrible.
Who
the giant club.
Who is Hagar the Horrible?
Really?
I don't even know who
You
that
don't is. Remember that? Oh.
Who is that?
Legendary. Never mind.
Really?
Let's move on. Yeah. That's. I'll tell you later. That's part of your education. Yeah.
But, you know, the temper of Stadler I loved. I learned pretty much the flowing long putting stroke, Crenshaw style. The speed of Fuzzy and Trevino. I just love the way Fuzzy Zeller and Trevino play golf.
Just get up and hit it.
Just get up and hit it. Trevino always said it. If you think about it too much, you're going to screw up.
Gene Sarazen said, if you're going to miss it quick.
Yeah. But it's a combination of all those guys that brought me closer to the game of golf that made me want to do what I do.
You know, people would say that you've gained a lot from the game. Do you feel that you owe the game anything?
I don't think the game owes me anything, and I don't owe the game anything. That's why it's a game. It's the hardest game on earth. And it's what you can get out of the game, beating the golf course, winning a golf tournament here and there, or winning a lot of tournaments. It never ends with us. It's once you win, it's up there again. And to do it like Tiger did, he did something that's impossible.
Not feasible.
It's not. For me, I still love to play golf. I love the competition. You know, I'm a competitive guy. I love it, but it's hard. It's harder now. It's a lot harder than it used to be.
Well, and it used to be really difficult, especially during the times that you would have some success, and then you would have a period of
fall off the planet,
enjoying yourself to the extent that, you know, it was self-destruction. If somebody had told me that John Daly was going to be playing the Champions Tour, if they told me that 15 years ago, I would have blown a snot bubble. I would have thought, he's not making 40, never mind 50. Because there were times where you just looked like, I mean, you died already, you just had forgotten to fall over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been times like that, but like I said, the perception of John Daly is a lot worse than the reality.
But the reality was still bad. I mean, I remember...
It was bad, but it's not as bad as people think. Thank God I was smart enough never to do drugs.
When did the scale tip?
I've been so many times, been to rehabs, done this, done that. And, you know, it's different for everybody. It's different for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
The way I look at it, I kept trying to drink and I kept trying to quit.
There was a point in my life where I decided, yes, I'm an alcoholic, but you know what? I'm going to accept it. My life is fine the way it is, and however long it lasts, as long as it feels like this, that's okay.
What's going to happen if I go out and drink 3/5 of Crown?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows, but I know everybody that knows me, they like it better this way than they do that way because they don't know what to expect.
You know, a lot of people, when they quit doing something like that, they lose a lot of friends.
I've lost a million friends when I quit drinking.
Yeah, but were they really friends?
No, because I was the one always buying it.
Yeah.
I was always one, hey, here, take a couple grand. Keep playing, boys.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go. I'm ready.
Yeah. You know?
And now that that doesn't happen, lost a lot of friends, so-called friends.
Mm-hmm. You were written off several times. The writers loved you because there was always something to write about, whether it was a magnificent triumph or a spectacular burnout, the classic withdrawal, sort of, you know, the shakes and the, you know, in tears. I remember watching that. And
Vancouver was the worst.
Yeah?
Canada was the worst. It's medication. It's just medication I was on, that trying to balance everything.
Oh, I know all about that, you know, because when it comes to
really
psych
weird.
Meds and things like that, basically there's not much science involved. They load them into a shotgun, fire them at you, and see which one sticks.
I don't believe in antidepressant pills. All it is decisions.
Mm.
It's just decisions on how you want to feel. You know, what makes you feel good? Hobbies, food.
Well, it's spare time as well. That's the enemy of any addict. There are two things that made a difference to me is when I understood that I didn't have to be sober for the rest of my life. I just had to be sober today.
Yeah.
And as simple as that sounds, it takes a lot of addicts a long time to figure that out.
It just seems like there's so many pills out there that, you know, they just throw at you to go, you know, that'll contain it for a while. It's just a quick fix.
I'm very glad that I have a better life through chemistry because
it works for some people.
Yeah, and I got to take 9 pills at night and 6 in the morning. And I hate the fact that I have to do it, but I hate it a whole lot more if I stop.
I've never been that way. I mean, I've been depressed because of relationships, because of my golf game, because of something I may have done.
Well, see, that's a short-term depression is what you're talking about. The best way that I can describe clinical depression, in fact, I'm bipolar, is
who
that...
Who isn't?
Well, I don't know. I may be tripolar. I couldn't watch the news. I was overwhelmed with sadness. And I had to go into my room and get away from my kids because they would see me crying. And, you know, finding the right medicine was... It took a long time, but...
So you never thought about just changing the channel?
It's still... You get more news, you know?
No, to something fun.
Yeah, no.
It's, or maybe watch golf. It'll make you give you a good
nap. Oh, that would have been worse?
It'd be a good nap.
Not far from the Lion's House is the Lion's Den Golf Club, owned and operated by the Lion himself.
My mom always said, if you have a chance to own this golf course, do it.
Buy land. They're not making any more of it.
So I told her I'll probably buy it one day in 2005 of October, I think it was, maybe 06. That I bought it with no grass and very few members. And took some metal detectors out to find sprinkler heads to see where they were.
Metal detectors?
Yeah, to find a lot of the sprinkler heads that haven't been used. Found 498 of them. Well, that's on the back nine, too. The back nines actually wasn't so bad. They had put an irrigation in there. But, you know, I'm putting a lot of money into it every year to keep it going.
Yeah.
It's $80 a month to be a member out here.
Wow.
No initiation fee.
How many members you got?
About 160.
So you're raising, I don't even want to do the math, but
it's
thinking that...
it's not near enough.
If you run this golf course properly, you've got to be losing a fortune.
I'm losing probably $250,000 to $350,000 a year, somewhere in there.
You see, that's so typical of the John that I know. That doesn't matter. You're providing a service here for the community.
Anybody, kids or teams that want to come here and play, it doesn't matter. I think everybody should have a chance to play golf. But if you're on a team, you're more than welcome to come here and play free and have fun.
Even, when you were playing well and, having tremendous financial success, there was a sadness there. It was always present, even as successful as you were, and it was devastating during the times that you were low.
I was trying to find true friends and people who really love me for not the name that everybody knows, but the person that I am, that... There's a void just missing for so many years.
Well, you were surrounded by people that wanted to be your friends, that didn't give a damn about you.
Exactly. And I think I've found peace with myself, that I've got a lot of decent, good people that care about my well-being, not how I hit a golf ball or who I can sign an autograph for or who I can give this to or give that to. It's not about me giving something. It's about them giving their love and their friendship to me. And that's Dardanelle, Arkansas.
If you went down to the bar that we were at last night, Monty,
that's the people I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're just genuine, good-hearted, good-working people. They don't care about what I've done. They just like me for me.
What would they do if they saw you order a Crown? If they saw you order a Jack Daniels on the rocks?
They'd probably go, uh-oh, here we go.
Would they jump in front of you?
We would probably still be sitting there. We'd have missed this interview. And those people would probably be sitting there waiting to see if I was okay. They wouldn't come and slap it out of my hand or don't do that. We don't do that here. We make our decisions. We're grown people. We make our decisions. But the falls and the ups, they're there for the right reasons, not the wrong.
Right. You would only have got drunk once, but it would have been for 8.5 months. Yeah.
Probably right.
Yeah,
I didn't have a lot of hangovers.
No, didn't have time for them. Yeah. You collect stuff. You've collected four wives and appear to be done with that. You've settled on Anna, who is totally different, different to anybody I've ever seen you with. You collect jerseys that are not for resale or anything like that. They're all signed to you. You collect guitars.
It's been years of collection. My first two jerseys were Jeff George and Eric Dickerson for the Colts. Didn't ask for them. They just were so cool they gave them to me. Wow, I'm going to get these framed. Next thing you know, there's, I don't know how many I got. They're just buddies I've met, friends I've met.
There are dozens of them. I mean, this room is just a handful.
Well, I didn't have any more room in the house, and I feel bad. I got Jim Browns in my garage, Kobe, Shaq's. Jose Canseco.
They're in the garage?
They're in the garage, but it does have air conditioner in it.
Sorry, boys.
But, I just ran out of room.
You got a beautiful home here, which you clearly didn't decorate yourself. This memorabilia is all over the place. The guitar room upstairs, there's a... there's a workout room that has no weights, I noticed.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah, everybody's workout room has a lot of equipment in it and that sort of thing. Yours is just all gone.
Yeah.
Where'd that go?
Went over to the high school here in Dardanelle for the Sand Lizards football team, basketball team. I donated it.
Did you carry it over there or did you have somebody?
No, we had some trucks come over and pick it up.
Pick it up, yeah. Because that would have been like exercise.
Yeah, that's relief when that was gone.
Right. Yeah.
I threw up enough when I used to drink. Mm. Every time I worked out, I threw up. And I said, you know what, this is just not good for me.
So, you know, collecting things occupies some of your time, but do you have business interests as well that, you know, I was surprised to find out about? I mean, you have your own line of beverages, alcoholic beverages as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
I've been seeing my name on menus for a sweet tea lemonade vodka.
I've seen it too, the John Daly.
The John Daly. And I think people should drink the proper John Daly. So me and a couple friends have come up through Franklin, out of San Jose, California. Been spending a year or two on it. I have sipped the samples, and I came this close to start drinking again.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I sipped them just to taste it. Oh. I almost came close to drinking again.
Oh, I bet you did.
But I said, you know what? There's going to be some people that are going to enjoy this drink because it's really good. We have a raspberry sweet tea vodka. We have a peach sweet tea vodka. And we have the original lemonade vodka. And I want people to just enjoy it. I'm not going to drink it. I know it tastes really, really good. Really, especially the raspberry.
Yeah, please don't, because that's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house, you know?
No, I'm not really concerned. I'm more in it, to be honest with you, to sell a good product and where a bartender can say, yeah, you like a John Daly? Here you go. Done.
JD, this is kind of awkward, but I feel it's something I've got to broach. I've been sitting with my back to this piece of art for the last hour. And you know the thing that really upsets me about this wall? Is that I was tied for seventh. You probably didn't notice me, but I was a major presence in that tournament, and you were very lucky.
You tied with Pater.
I tied with Steve Pate, and the leaderboard is obscured by people wearing the same hat for some reason. And I should be in front of Pate because he's an idiot. that just upsets me. There's a bunch of things wrong with it.
Since my 2012 interview, Long John is taking a crack at the PGA Tour Champions, where he's still crushing the ball down the old geezer's throats. So the question is, will John Daly use this fresh start to shake off the shabby overcoat of squandered potential and bad habits? Whether he does or doesn't, I hope he survives and thrives and makes peace with the forces that have haunted him. He's a good man and a great player, and you never know what's going to happen next. Thanks for joining me on another scintillating podcast. I hope it brightened your day as much as it did mine. Don't forget, you can catch more of me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. My fingers are so tired. Yeah, ba, ba, dee, dee, da.